To me, I always say that I am a trophy hunter. I mean, I got a lot of mounts sitting right here. I got maybe 50 mounts in this room, but you can be a trophy hunter and a meat hunter because I take every ounce of meat from these kills and my freezers are full of it. And I love providing for others. So it's not like you're one or the other. Because I've had people say to me, like, are you a trophy hunter or do you hunt for meat? And I'm like, both. I mean, both. You can be both. It's not mutually exclusive. So yeah, I have a bunch of trophies here, but that the meat from these kills sustain me every day and my family.
How can I help? How can I be useful in ending needless suffering? Do not be afraid of work that has no end.
We have to organize a social movement.
We have an opportunity to lead by example versus just talking hot air. I think the more people in this fight, the more we grow. Eventually it could change. You know, the people are the ones that can make the change.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Change Agents, an Ironclad original presented by Montana Knife Company. Today, we're going to be talking about activism and activists through the lens of hunting, trophy hunting, I would say specifically, what they get right and potentially what they may be getting wrong. My guest today to work our way through this subject is Cameron Haynes. Cameron Haynes is a bow hunter, a wildlife advocate, and an avid outdoorsman. He's the host of the Keep Hammering podcast and the series Lift, Run, Shoot. And he recently embarked on a mountain lion hunt in Colorado, a state that has introduced new ballot measures that could eliminate or greatly restrict similar hunts in the future. We're going to talk about all of those things, the future of hunting, the history of hunting, and everything in between. So let's dive right in, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. What do you think your life would look like if you had never picked up a bow? Have you ever spent much time thinking about where you would be or what you'd be doing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would be, do you cuss on this?
Oh, yeah. It's the internet.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, cool. I would be a small town fuck up. Cause that's what I was. So there's, I don't even have to guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have to guess. So I would have some, you know, shit job, because I did have a shit job, and I would just come home after every night and probably drink a few beers and, you know, talk shit about the people I worked with and mostly management. And then the weekend, it would just be like whatever, trying to do something and dreading Monday. That'd be my life.
You know what's crazy about that? The number of people who probably fall into that as their norm. It's probably way higher than either you and I would want to actually recognize. I think there's a lot of people in that cycle.
I think so. And it's just like, so that's why it's easy for me to be pretty grateful. I mean, very grateful, because that I was this close to that, you know, I mean, without bow hunting and then without having some early success and gaining a little confidence, that's all it would be. I mean, you just try to get a decent job where you can have like a manufactured home and a decent truck that's going to get you to work, and you pay the bills and that's it.
Yeah.
That was pretty much my best case scenario. And then, you know, one thing led to another.
Well, I'm glad it turned out. I'm glad it turned out for you the way it did, man.
I feel very lucky. Yes.
So where did if that's where you think it was going to go, how early did you pick up a bow? Like, kind of walk me into how you were exposed to bow hunting.
Yeah. I think it was 18. I got a bow, and then I 19. Then I started bow hunting when I was 20. So I tried to go play college football down here in Southern Oregon, and just didn't have any money to even go to school down there. So, you know, I had a little Pell Grant, so that was good. You'd have to pay that back, but everything else was financial aid. And I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work. Plus, I wasn't even good enough. But I tried. So then I came back, and it's just like, you know, just drinking and hanging out. Lived with three guys in an apartment. It was just going to it's not like this is a big city, but there's clubs here and, you know, quarter beer night type shit. And so I was just doing that. And then my buddy Roy said, you know, I hunted all the time. I always killed with the rifle. But he said, hey, you should try bow hunting because it's way less people, more animals, and you know, it's fun. So I got this cheap bow, and just we shot all the time. We just loved it. As I said, 19. And then that first year, I was pretty much obsessed with elk hunting. I just wanted to kill a bull so bad. And it took 18 straight days. I was supposed to be going to school, and I kind of went, I think, a couple days, but would mostly hunt in the morning and then not go to my classes in the afternoon. So I pretty much dropped, I quit college that first term and elk hunted. And after 18 days, I killed a spike bull. And that, like, kind of got the wheels in motion. It's like I killed a bull, which to me, killing a bull elk, it didn't even matter. You know, a bull is what we used to say. It didn't matter if it was a spike. And that kind of just started me down that path. And then it was just couldn't get enough.
Fair to say at that point, the hunting became your true north on your compass, and everything else was like, yeah, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if it was that clear cut, but I still made so many mistakes. I still would, you know, not drink, then go drink, then crash trucks and get punched and get in fights. And then finally I was like, God, am I going to work at a, I was working at this warehouse over here part-time at Coast to Coast Warehouse. And I was like, God, I at least got to get a full-time job. And then I met, you know, my wife there, and finally we had a kid, got married, had a kid. And then I was like, okay, now maybe I should not be a complete loser, but still was sometimes. So it took a little bit of, there's some rough waters to get there, but I always kept bow hunting and kept writing because I loved writing for whatever reason. And I love sharing my adventures. So I just kept going down that path and getting more opportunities and having more success. And then finally I got my shit together, but like 10 years later.
Yeah, but that's to me, like that meat and potatoes is so, like, I love those portions of the story. It's easy, it would be easy for somebody to look at you on social media and it's the classic, well, I want to be what Cam is, and I'm just going to start today, and maybe by next month I'll be there. The over year, you know, overnight 10-year success. There's a lot of shit in between, you know, where you started and where you are now. And it's, I don't know, maybe that's a byproduct of the instant gratification world. People seem to want to skip the meat and potatoes portion, but it truly is, it makes you the man that you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's now it's easy to see that and say that, but back, you know, when people are trying or want to get, you know, everybody wants respect type thing. Especially men, I think we, you know, do a lot of things to try to earn respect. So during that time when it was like, oh, people, I was having success, people talking shit, I would fuck up, give them more reason to talk shit. So it was like that whole thing, you can't see it then, but now you look back and you're like, oh, that was, man, that was such an important time in my life. I'm glad I pushed through. But at the time, man, it just feels like, I don't even know what it feels like. It just,
Feels like
you
drowning.
know, it feels like,
I know what you're talking about.
yeah, it's just a struggle. It's a struggle. So, I mean,
I have
yeah,
some
but
certain, I certainly have some wave tops. Actually, they probably would be valley bottoms of galactic fuck ups in my life, where in that moment I was being held accountable for them. And then sometimes being held accountable over a long period of time, depending on how bad I fucked up. And it's like, I'm never going to get out of this. I'm never going to be able to do what I want to do. I don't know if I'm going to survive. And I look back now on decades past those things, like, man, that actually changed the trajectory of my life. If that hadn't happened, I don't know what I'd be doing today. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but in the midst of it, yeah, it's different. Now we can look back and be grateful and you know, appreciative of all those struggles. But yeah,
Yeah.
it's all good.
How was
It's
your
life.
2023 hunting season?
It was good. It was busy. I filmed all of, I had my son, you know, he got out of the army a year ago and he just started working for me. I mean, he didn't want to for a while. He was just gonna, he's like, I, you know, sick of, you know how it goes, sick
Oh,
of
I
military
do.
people telling him what to do. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you were in a lot longer than him, but
That just means he
yeah,
is
you know,
smarter
so
than me, for clarity. He was like, oh, I recognize this early. I'm out.
yeah. So he was in for 5 years. He stayed a little longer because he wanted to get another deployment with the guys, and then got out. But he wanted just like, oh, I just want a regular job. I'm sick of, you know, whatever, you know, the grooming standards, the being told what to do. I just want to work. So he got a job at like this mill, and he's like, this is what I want to do. And then after about 3 weeks working nights, he's like, and I was telling him, I'm like, hey, you know, you're good at this. I need somebody. I'd just soon pay you as anybody else. And then after about 3 weeks and nights, he's like, so what was that job you were talking about? So, and he came on, and yeah, he's doing great. So he's like, he went with me in all my hunts except for in Utah there where you've been. But all the other elk hunts, he filmed, and we made films on, and I was able to share the trips with him, and he's tough. I don't have to worry about, you know, people keeping up for anything. And so yeah, the season went great, to answer your question. And we were able to produce a lot of film, or a number of films, that I just, as I said, as a writer, I like to share my adventures. And then through video, we did the same thing. So it was successful.
I mean, the stories that you're talking about, I mean, one of the things I love about social media in the digital world is that people who would have no, I don't know, maybe they live in like the middle of Manhattan. Not that I'm an expert in that, but I've been through there, and I haven't seen any elk cruising down the street. And I don't think anybody mm-hmm. has there. Be a little bit of like an I Am Legend Will Smith scenario, I guess. But it gives people a portal into your world and the things that you do. And I love the stories because it explains the why. And one of the things I met you actually very, very early on when I started bow hunting. I think it's probably 5 or 6 years ago. So I had like toes in the water. But even me, I oftentimes bounce up against people who they have this visceral reaction against hunting for reasons mm-hmm. that I struggle to understand sometimes, because it's not that they don't eat meat. They're totally happy going to a grocery store and like looking through the ribeyes or New York's and all that. But they really dislike hunting. And oftentimes it's associated with, I think, if I have the time to dial in with them, it comes down to, well, you're just doing it for the sport. You're just doing it for the trophy aspect. And I think, I mean, you have a beautiful mule deer off your left shoulder, which when I see that, the first thing I think of, I'm like, oh man, I bet you there's an awesome story associated with that. Like probably a killer hunt. Yeah. It's like, how far was the shot? What happened? Talk to me about all of those things. And other people looking like, you're a piece of shit, Cam. That was an animal out there living its best life. Why couldn't you let it die of old age at 50? How do you bridge that gap with people?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think there's so much disconnection, as you mentioned, New York, but there's a lot of people don't have, you know, the connection of life with their food, and they're, for them to sustain themselves, they're taking a life, no matter what it is, whether it's a freaking plant in a salad or wheat for their bread or meat from, you know, a cow. But your life costs life. That's all there is to it. So I think we try to do a good job, and I know you do too, of just explaining that part of it. It's, you know, and Rogan has been probably the number one voice for this, reaching people that don't understand hunting and explaining, you know, what's involved. And, you know, I'll be honest, it's not like I get off on watching animals die. I don't like watching animals die. I don't like the suffering. I want to make a good shot, cause I want to be merciful in my bow hunting. But hunting is, and killing is, it can be messy sometimes. So it's not always perfect, but we have blood on our hands. We're out there, we're providing for ourselves and our family. And, you know, to the people that might question that, I would just say, you know, we're actually out there doing it. You're paying somebody to do it for you. And no matter how you want to look at it, your life costs life, no matter how, you know, if you're vegan, vegetarian, or a carnivore. You are ending lives to survive. So the fact that hunters do it themselves and take ownership over that, I think deserves respect. I mean, it's not like I'm out there demanding, give me respect, but it's just that, hey, we're accepting how this life works and how, you know, it just to survive, this is what happens. And I just don't think many people want to be honest with that, because it's easier to ignore it than easier to judge people who are out there killing animals or hunting. Or they'll just say killing animal, but we say hunting, because we know the kill is just one small part of the journey. It's the people, the country, the respect for the pursuit. That's the important part. And then the killing is necessary, for us to be successful and for the to achieve our goals, but it's not everything. We're just not out there just to kill, because I don't, that's probably my least, I mean, it's a marker of success, definitely, for the endeavor, but it's, I don't like it, but I do it because I'm a hunter and that's just what has to happen. So I get that it's hard to understand for somebody who hasn't been involved in the hunting culture, but just being honest about where your food comes from is what we hope to educate people on.
My personal thoughts on it are definitely in line with what you said. I mean, that moment of truth where if you're lucky enough to have an animal come out in front of you, I really think we should relabel hunting, hiking for miles and not seeing shit most of the time. That would be a more accurate description of what, at least hunting for me. That moment of truth, I mean, that's cool, but some of my most favorite memories of hunting, we have an overlap of social circle, are laughing so hard that I couldn't hunt in that moment. Like tears streaming down my face with a bow or rifle in my hand, needing to sit down, or the hard work, like covered in sweat or rushing and being unsuccessful and looking back on that. Like to me, all the things that lead up to that moment of truth and then the things after that are actually what I remember. That actual moment of either coming to full draw and releasing an arrow or flipping a safety off on a rifle and squeezing a shot off. I don't have a great recollection of those. And I think it's just because I don't care. It's the least important portion to me, at least, of those acts. But I don't know.
Yeah. It's I get that. The fellowship is the big part of it. And I like the work too. After the animal's dead, I like breaking it down. I like packing it out on my back. I mean, so much so that for years, my kids, they didn't know how to even process an animal, how to do, because I would just be like, no, I'm doing it. So I love, to your point, I do love all of it too. I mean, I do remember like this buck here, that was a 43-yard shot, slightly quartering away, that arrow hit perfect. So I do remember those, like the vivid detail of that, but it's not, unless I'm actually like consciously like, what happened on that? I am mostly thinking about who I was with on it and what I remember. The day there were scattered clouds out there. The sun was coming up, as in Colorado high country, 10,000 feet. Sun was coming up and it was just red. You know, it reminds you of that red skies at night, sailor's light, red skies in the morning, sailor warning. You know, that's a call to your career there for you.
I've never been on a ship. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Navy, baby.
I guess.
Yeah, I remember that. That red sky, and I remember so much about that morning, that it was kind of a crisp morning, and it was very early in the day, right when that sun was breaking, and I made that perfect shot on that buck, and that was the oldest buck out there. He's dark gray, so I remember everything about it, and that's what I think of when I think of that animal. I don't think of the kill necessarily. I think of like the setting and the country and the situation and the people, as I mentioned. So. I wish everybody got that. You know, I wish all these non-hunters or people that like to judge hunters could feel what that feels like, but obviously it's not possible. So we just have to do our best to try to explain it, I guess.
Ladies and gentlemen, I could not be more fired up to introduce the presenting sponsor for season 2 of Change Agents, Montana Knife Company. Founded by somebody that I feel very fortunate to call a personal friend, Master Bladesmith Josh Smith. Not only a Master Bladesmith, but the youngest Master Bladesmith and one of the most experienced in the world. Montana Knife Company blades are some of the finest that I've ever been able to get my hands on. They are the sharpest knife out of the box, and they're some of the easiest to resharpen when you dull the blade. I take them everywhere that I go. I have them in every vehicle that I own and every backpack that I ever take into the backcountry. Specifically, my favorite blade of theirs is the Speed Goat. It's lightweight, but so incredibly capable. I never leave home without it. If you're familiar with Montana Knife Company, you know it is often very difficult to get one of their blades because they sell out within minutes of being released. What you should be able to find in stock are the Blackfoot 2.0, Speed Goat, or a Stonewall Skinner. And if you use the code CHANGEAGENTS10, that's going to net you 10% off of your first order. Again, my personal favorite blade is the Speed Goat. If they have them in stock right now, don't mess around. Put it in your cart and complete the checkout. Montana Knife Company, they build working knives for working people. And like I said at the beginning, I could not be more proud to collaborate with them on Change Agents Season 2. There's a lot of things I like about the Mountain Tough program, but I think primarily what I enjoy is they focus on mental toughness in addition to just the physical toughness. Everything they do is grounded in one purpose: life transformations and being strong between the years in the mind. And there's also a community of 15,000 plus Mountain Tough athletes. So the community is strong, they're supportive, and they're going to help keep you accountable. So you can train anywhere. You can stream anywhere. You can access guided training and on-demand workouts right from your phone, your tablet, or TV or computer, whatever you're into. And everything you need is in one spot. The Mountain Tough subscription gets you access to all the Mountain Tough programs, new programs, and bonus content. And they have programs for everyone. Those who hit the gym and heavy weights, those who like to work out at home with no gear or minimal gear, and everything in between. Mountain Tough has been the trusted training by the dedicated for years now, including U.S. military special forces and dedicated backcountry hunters. There is no excuse for you to not start today. With Mountain Tough, you can conquer your goals with the ideal program for your lifestyle and schedule. Train with equipment or just your body weight on your phone, tablet, TV, or web browser. Most importantly, they will help you train your mindset so you are always ready for anything that life throws your way. Mountain Tough subscribers get full access to world-class home and gym programs, groundbreaking mental toughness training, self-improvement, prehab and rehab, biomechanical form coaching, stretching and mobility flows, nutrition guidance, challenge workouts, and the global Mountain Tough community. Mountain Tough is offering Change Agents listeners an incredible offer. You're going to get 40% off on the all-new Mountain Tough Plus annual subscription with the code CHANGEAGENT. Go to mtntough.com and enter the code CHANGEAGENTS to receive 40% off, a savings of about $100 on your Mountain Tough Plus annual subscription. That is MTN, Mike Tango November, tough.com, and enter the code CHANGEAGENTS to save 40%. That is less than 50 cents per day for the best in-class physical and mental training. What are your personal thoughts? And I think what I'm about to ask you ties into some of the, at least, initial reaction to hunting, because there is a legitimate community of people, or a group of people, or collection of people who actually are into it for trophy hunting. And that's all that they want. I'm just curious your personal thoughts. How do you think that kind of fits into the ecosystem? And a lot of the times I've seen that, you know, whether it's lions in Africa, you know, game animals in Africa, that can be a little bit more complicated in my experience to kind of explain that role or place in the hunting ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, the trophy hunting moniker is just, I don't want to say it's lazy, but it's an easy, like, judgment type label to put on hunters. To me, I always say that, I am a trophy hunter. I mean, I got a lot of mounts sitting right here. I got maybe 50 mounts in this room. But you can be a trophy hunter and a meat hunter, because I take every ounce of meat from these kills and my freezers are full of it. And I love providing for others. So it's not like you're one or the other, because I've had people say to me, like, are you a trophy hunter or do you hunt for meat? And I'm like, both. I mean, both. You can be both. It's not mutually exclusive. So yeah, I have a bunch of trophies here, but the meat from these kills sustain me every day, and my family and my friends and people who, you know, might need meat. And I have some extra, especially nowadays, meat's so expensive. So I do share a lot of my wild game kills with others. And so I would just say that, yeah, I'm looking for a trophy, because that usually indicates an old mature animal. And that's the ones that, for the ecosystem and for the health of the herd that we're hunting, those are the ones that you want to take out. And so, you know, a byproduct of that, that is, they're going to have large antlers. They would be considered trophies, but also they have more meat because they're old, mature animals. So to me, that's just as important. And I have hundreds of pounds of meat to bring home after I have a successful fall. And I would just say, yeah, I'm not going to say we're both, but I'm both for sure. Trophy hunter and a meat hunter.
Do you think there is a place for people who are not even interested in the meat and they do just want to travel and collect trophies of wild games?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, to be honest, there's some animals that just need to be killed. Let's throw those two others to it. Coyotes, wolves, you know, lion meat is good. You can eat that. I was just lion hunting. I didn't kill one. But there are some in Africa, you can't really get the meat back, but the meat is utilized by the communities over there if you donate it. So, and then the hunting in Africa does sustain the communities, because it's not like that a lot of those African communities, there's not some, you know, warehouse like that I worked at or mill that my son worked at. There's not really much industry over there. So without hunting and the money that hunting brings into these concessions, it's going to be a tough road to hoe over there. So for them, you know, they would say like a trophy hunter is usually like some rich white guy. So a rich white guy goes over to Africa and kills whatever, that is injecting money into the community that they need. So are they hunting strictly for trophies? Yes. Is it a net positive? Yes.
Well, it's also managed too. I think that's, and I've never been down to those organizations, but I've heard from multiple people who have. It's not like they're walking through the bush with a, you know, a rifle slung over their shoulder, even though that would be an interesting way to do that, because you would get mauled to death probably. But it's not, hey, that lion looks amazing and I just feel like shooting that. There are local people there who are looking at the health of whatever herd it may be, from whatever species it may be, and actually doing their best to, on the fringes, take animals that are actually going to increase the health of the herd. I think that's a piece of hunting that is often lost. And it's when you throw the conservation portion into that, there's this huge leap in logic that people have to make between killing and conservation. And it's like one end of the rainbow to the other. And, you know, I'm glad that you brought up the mountain lion hunt, because I wanted to talk to you about that, because it sounds like Colorado is getting ready to introduce some legislation that might actually limit cat hunting. You know, and the impact the impacts from that on species outside of cats, species you and I love, elk. I still remember, it's totally non-related to your cat hunt, but you were actually in Utah with me. You had just left when I killed that first bull that came into 3 yards. Yeah. It was screaming in my face, and I was legitimately thinking of self-defense situations, and I had landed on, I'm going to shove the cameraman at the bull and go the other direction. That is legitimately what I had landed on. But that, like, vibration of, I've never had felt that. But since then, like, that's probably the most replayed video on my phone. And I'll start watching that in June. I'm like, I need to go work out. I got to get.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, that was God.
That was like the last day of the hunt too, wasn't it?
It was the last like few hours of the last day. And man, what a way to cap that off. But that, to me, if I was interested in hunting before that, the difference in my interest in hunting before that and my obsession with elk after that are not the same sport. Like, we're talking.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, were you, did you start that story? Cause did you see a lion on that hunt?
I didn't see a lion on that hunt. When you brought up, the lion, it just kind of triggered for me the legislation that I think groups, individuals, and organizations, they want to pursue it. And I'm going to say they have the best of intentions in mind, but they may not understand the cascading consequences that comes from saying, hey, you shouldn't hunt that animal. We should let nature take its course. And I often think people, when they say we should let nature take its course, they have this unrealistic expectation of what that means. You know, we're talking, elk must go to nursing homes when they get old, and they eat Jell-O and have somebody wipe their ass. And you and I have both seen actually what happens. They get ripped to pieces, probably injured first. They suffer. It's a horrendous and horrible death comparatively to an arrow or a rifle. And it just happened, you know, you just got back from Colorado, so it kind of was in line with what I wanted to talk to you about. But talk to me about the hunt in Colorado. What were you hunting for, and how did it go?
Yeah, I mean, I was after lions, and I've, you know, I do want to mention, like, in Africa, you said for the health of the herd type thing. So I also hunt, I've never killed a cat, but I want to kill big, mature male toms. And over in Africa, I did go after African lion because I thought that would, I just like the intensity of I don't want to say, you know, it doesn't have to be dangerous all the time, but I like intense things. So African lion with the bow, I thought this would be cool, but or a great challenge. The point is, I didn't kill one because, to your point, you want to find a lone male without a pride that's over 6 years old, because that's an animal that's they've determined is best for the health of the herd, right? So I had one opportunity at a six-year-old plus male, and I had it at 68 yards. It's quartering two, so I didn't take that shot because I didn't want to, you know, be hitting a 500 or 600 pound animal bad. So I didn't take it. Quartering two is not a great angle for hunters, for bow hunters. You probably know that. And then I got in the brush with it, and I got it to 50 yards. I didn't have a clear shot. So I ended up never getting a shot. But the point is, it's like, it's not like you're just driving around and shooting every lion you see. It's very selective, and that's how hunting generally works. You know, in the States here, it's a little different. The fishing game determines what's legal, and it might be a forked horn buck or larger. And so you can kill a young deer. But if you're being like, if you're thinking about what's best for the health of the animals and the carrying capacity and how the herds operate, it's best to take that old male. So Africa does a really good job of that. And so, yeah, there is a system to it, but, or a strategy to it. But over here, so on this last hunt in Colorado, I've never killed a cat, but I felt like it was important for me to go do that hunt because of the timing of this. And I just love bow hunting. Using dogs is a whole different thing. I've killed one bear using dogs just so I knew what it was, mm-hmm. you know, just so I could talk about it intelligently and understand the there's an art to it, really. Those hounds are, the hounds and the owners are, have such a connection. So it's really cool. That's a whole different world that definitely even hunters don't understand. But I've been around it where I know how valuable these hounds are and how much the dogs love the chase and how there is an art to it. So I thought, well, I need to do my part. I can't just be killing all these prey animals and not killing predators also. So each year I try to kill a couple of bear, coyotes, you know, I got wolf hides here. I kill more prey than predators, but I do understand we have to kill both. So to that point, I need to go do a mountain lion hunt. I need to talk about why it's important. And I was spent 6 days there, and it's not like I'm just going to kill any lion again, as we've talked about a number of times now. I want to kill an old mature animal, and I just never had a chance at it. And mountain lion hunting is so regulated there. Like, there's a quota in this area I was hunting. It was 34 lions. So you call in after 5 o'clock every night, and you see how many lions came in on the quota that day.
Oh, interesting.
And the season's been open for over 2 months now. And we were at like, I got there, we were like at 31. So there could be three more lions. And by the time I left after 6 days is at 33. So one more lion could be killed. And I think the day that I left, that lion was killed and that quota is closed now. So you can't over harvest these animals. They're very strategic on how many you can kill in each unit. And in Colorado, they kill 450 roughly, and there's estimates of up to 7,000. So it's a, you know, under 10% type number of the species in that area or in that state. And it works, you know, they've been doing it for years. Well, now the antis come in, and you mentioned this, that, you know, some of them do have the best intentions. Maybe they don't understand how it all works, but some of them, I think, don't have great intentions. Some of these politicians, I think, if you're a big conspiracy theorist, you know, like me and my buddy Alex Jones, we would say they want to take. I've actually never met him, but I do like listening to him. I actually be entertained.
Agreed.
Anyway, what's that?
Agreed. He is entertaining. Agreed, at the very least. You need to use with caution about what you attach yourself to. And the thing is, sometimes he's right. And that's what makes that guy such a variable.
Most times he's right is the crazy part. His delivery, I don't know. I like the delivery, but you know, as we know, delivery is important. We've heard all about the mean tweets. So
yeah,
people get pretty sensitive with how that message is delivered. But yeah, so God, what was my point? Oh yeah. So I think if you're a conspiracy theorist, they hate people like us. There's people in the government who hate people like us. And when I say people like us, I would say hunters, self-sufficient, capable. I don't want to say strong, not everybody's strong, but I mean, definitely resilient. They want people they can control. They can say, you do this, you stay in your house because of this, you wear this mask because whatever, and for your sake, you know, for your community. And people will be like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm doing that. Everything you say, I'm doing. Oh, we shouldn't eat meat. We should eat this meat made out of bugs and shit. That's not hunters. So they don't like us. So the point, I think, they're introducing wolves back in Colorado. They're banning they want to ban mountain lion hunting with they've already canceled the April season. They would love, if I'm being tinfoil hat, to have all these predators knocking all these prey numbers down to where hunting isn't necessary. Then they can say, like, well, do you guys really need weapons now? Because you said you needed weapons for hunting. Now there's nothing to hunt because we've got the ecosystem balanced. We got these wolves back in, and they like to say they're keystone species type thing. But wolves, lions, even black bears they hammer deer fawns and elk calves and moose calves. Right when they drop, the black bear will go in there and kill them. Coyotes wipe out, they say, 60% of deer fawns. So once that's done and there's not a large number of deer and elk and there's no need for hunters to manage them, then, you know, we're eliminated. Basically our lifestyle's eliminated, and then they got more, you know, cuckish type men they can control.
It's one of my favorite words, and that's the first time it's been used on this series, and I would like to congratulate you for using it in that context, because I'm fucking stoked right now that just came out.
What, cuckish?
Cuckish. It's one of my favorite words.
I don't know if I've ever said cuckish. I know I've said cuck, but I'm making an adverb or something, I guess, whatever.
I like it. So what, I mean, is it even possible, let's say that they, you know, they remove all hunting from, not prey animals. What's the other side of the prey animals? I'm losing the word right now. That's, you know, the prey animals being
predator
animals. That system actually won't self-regulate. I mean, won't it go hard the other direction, and then it'll have to, then there'd be starvation from the predator animals, and which hopefully it's like, it would be this really crazy pendulum, right? It's not going to hit this homeostasis like a flat tide.
No, that's the thing, is we got science. I don't want to, you know, science, like follow the science is kind of taking a hit after Fauci, but there is science and biology to balancing the predator prey relationship and given the carrying capacity of the land. So with the wildlife officials, that's their job. They're out there, they're monitoring that. So yeah, there are probably some peaks and valleys in how we do it now, but they're not as dramatic as what you just explained, where, you know, too many predators wipe out and the predators starve because they can't find enough food, or they're wiping out all the rabbits after there's no deer or elk. And so, yeah, there's this big wide swing that it isn't really great for any animal. So yeah, they want to eliminate the science to it, and you know, good sound decision-making, which is what's been working for years, just to like, and they sell it on this thing that, you know, Mother Nature will balance itself. And maybe eventually, but, you know, tag numbers are allocated and hunters stick to that. So as I said, 34 lions in the unit I was hunting, predators, they'll kill. I mean, I found a lion had killed a beef cat, calf. It was laying in the creek. The lion couldn't get it out of the creek, so left it. Couldn't pull it out because it was like, it was probably like maybe a 300 pound calf. And a lion was a younger lion, like a 3-inch track. So probably maybe a 80 or 90 pound or 100 pound calf. It couldn't get that calf out of the water, so it left it. We found an elk that was just kind of chewed on a little bit, a lot of meat left. So it's like, they will kill, and they're not like hunters using every ounce of that and cherishing it. if they can't get it or it's like too much work, they'll just go kill something else. And they will just keep killing, especially wolves, until, I mean, it's just what they do. It's not, you can't even blame them. They're killers.
Yeah.
That's just, they're just doing what they do. But there is no like, oh, they're not calling in and checking the quota every night saying, hey, guys, we gotta chill out on killing these elk. They're, you know, we've killed enough. They'll just keep doing it. So yeah, to your point, it's there is no off switch for a predator.
In your experience, since you have been hunting, I'm sure you've seen certain species be allocated, you know, for conservation, whatever it be, put onto the list where you can't hunt. How often have you seen animals being taken off of that list? I'm just curious how difficult it is. I don't actually know how difficult it is to get them on, but I feel like once they're on there, that's a long road to hoe to get them off.
Yeah, it definitely. So that's with the wolves. You know, they can say, yeah, we just want to reintroduce wolves to Colorado. And I don't even know if they say it, but probably some do that. Once it reaches a healthy level, then they could be managed through hunting. But once that decision is ever starts being discussed, then the wolf advocates or what are they called? Animal rights activists would say, why would you ever need to kill a wolf? So they get protected and then they never get put back on the hunting. That's on the hunt, on the opportunities to hunt. I think that's kind of what BC is going through right now is, you know, in British Columbia, the big city is Vancouver. And so that's, as we know, that's a voting block or the voting. Yeah. That's where all the numbers are for the vote. So they could say, no, we don't need to hunt grizzlies. The people who live out with grizzlies are like, what the hell are you talking about? There's grizzlies everywhere. And so now in BC, they outlawed grizzly hunting. And now as predicted, the deer, elk, and moose are, you know, getting hammered out there. And there's tons of bears and you just can't kill them. And it'll take, you know, like a grizzly running through Starbucks and killing six people before anybody in Vancouver thinks, oh, well, maybe we should hunt them again. So, yeah, I mean, I agree that it's going to be tough to get them off or back on the opportunity to hunt.
Yeah, it seems like one of those things where for those that care about it, you're going to have to hold on to it like tooth and nail, because once it's gone, it may actually be gone forever.
Yeah, and, you know, Clay Newcomb and I from Meat Eater yesterday were talking about that. He was here on the podcast. And these anti-hunting advocates, they go after the low-hanging fruit, and that's lions, running lions with dogs. That's like, because people don't understand it. And so that's a really easy one to say. I mean, that's how in Oregon, they actually banned lion hunting with dogs and baiting for black bear and hunting black bear with dogs in 1994. All they had to do is show some footage of a lion or a black bear getting shot out of a tree because the dogs had a treat up there, bouncing off the limbs and then hitting the ground. They show a couple of commercials like that, it's over. It's over because, you know, even hunters I don't even really like watching it, let alone somebody who has never killed an animal hunted in their life. So it's a really, as I said, a low-hanging fruit. We're at a big disadvantage because of that optic that can be shared out there. That's why, you know, it's important on social media to really think about what we're putting out there, because it can be used against us.
Yeah. Absent context, I know exactly the videos that you're talking about. Those can be, mm-hmm. I mean, especially if you catch somebody early in their life who has no, maybe it again, go back to Manhattan just to reuse an example. They like, they don't even have an opportunity to hunt, but they're like, boom, looking at that on their phone, riding the subway to work. They see that, like, if that's hunting, fuck these guys and everything to do with this. And that's how you have influence on people absent the experience or context. And that's powerful.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's why there's one aspect to me. I was 6 days in Colorado, freezing my ass off. It was like minus 11 a few days, but, and I know you guys have been dealing with that cold too, but
negative 33. So I don't want to hear about this sunny negative 11 shit. I'm wearing flip flops and shorts in that.
Yeah, negative 30. How crazy is that? Was that different than San Diego?
I mean, it was about the same. Usually October in San Diego is about the same. A little cloudy, a little negative.
I mean, one of the first times we hung out, I went down and we did skydiving in San Diego. And that was not minus 33. We were I don't know how many thousand feet up, but in T-shirts and just having a great time.
Yeah.
Not not minus 33.
That's why it's so expensive to live there. Good morning, everybody. As you know, Change Agents is an Ironclad original. But what you may not know is that for over a decade, Ironclad has worked with brands and individuals to create world-class films, series, podcasts, and ad campaigns. In fact, I've been working with Ironclad for the past few years. I was introduced to them on a project through the Navy SEAL Foundation. I've worked with them on a variety of projects, even up here in Montana, long before they proposed the idea of Change Agents to me. They're the best in their field. And I say that because there are plenty of people out there looking for the best, looking for the cream of the crop, looking for the top of the triangle. And if you're looking for that, you need to look no further than Ironclad. If you ever need media by way of film, a series, podcasts, or ad campaigns, they have you covered. You can reach out today and follow them anywhere at This Is Ironclad, the ampersand, and then This Is Ironclad, or visit them online, thisisironclad.com. Again, www.thisisironclad.com. Actually, for my own edification, I've never hunted. I've been around when people were using dogs, but it was in Canada and it was for bears. How do you actually integrate the hounds for a cat hunt? What are the mechanics of how that works?
Yeah. So you need, well, I don't know. I'm not an expert on it.
Yeah.
I've done it for 6 days. So keep that in mind. But yeah, you want snow because you want to be able to pick up the tracks, and you can base what type of lion it is on the size of the track and the length of the stride. So if you can get, you know, a 4-inch wide track, that, you know, now we're starting to talk mature animals. And then a 36-inch long stride. So once you can identify, okay, this is a mature cat, like we found a track like that, and then you got to kind of freshen it up. So the last day I was on a good track, we had seen, let me think how we saw it. I think it just had crossed the road, but the snow was melting. So I was kind of losing opportunity because you need that snow so you can read these tracks. So got on this track and needed to freshen it up because it was from the day prior. So if they have 12 hours on you, like we thought the evening or the afternoon prior. So if they have, at this time it was probably 15 hours is what the lion had on us. So you got to try to catch that up. So I got on the track and I trailed it my phone said 4 miles, but that was like different walking. But I think it was on that track for probably 3 miles. And basically you're just going through following the lion everywhere it went. And I could see he was hunting. He would like get up to trees and he'd be sitting behind the tree, and you could see deer and elk tracks in the snow, mm-hmm. or mostly deer is where he was. And so he'd be sitting behind the tree and I could tell he was hunting, and then he'd go. Anyway, I did this for 3 miles thinking we're going to catch up to him, found a few places where he laid down. And then I was hoping, well, hopefully he lays down here for like a couple hours, beds down. And then that would, you know, I could shorten that gap up. Or I was really hoping he'd get a kill, because they kill all the time, obviously. And then that would have delayed him, because also once they get a belly full of meat, you know, kind of shout out to your twisted intestine, they don't want to run. You know, I mean, they don't want to run as far once those dogs get on them, because they got a stomach full of meat. So I was hoping he'd get a kill. He never did. But we eventually found where another lion had crossed the road and then turned the dogs loose on it. And it wasn't the one that I was trying to freshen up. And the dogs will kind of sort it out. They're all fired up, and they'll go down, and then they have the GPS collars on them. The guys have the tracker that they're watching it. And then based on how that movement and the speed that they're going and how far they're going and what's happening, the GPS reader will say, they got a lion treed, because all the dogs are staying right at the tree. Yeah. So it's like, oh, it's marking treed on here. But that's in general how it works. And you just hope that at that time you were on a mature lion, and that's the one you wanted to kill. And we never had that opportunity. It was never like a mature lion in the tree. So no kill. But in general, that's how it works. To get the dogs to that point, so much work. so much work, but these houndsmen love it. The dogs live for it. It's, as I said, it's an art getting dogs that can catch lions, tree them, and not get killed in the process. It's a different world, but I loved it, even though I wasn't successful.
I mean, it sounds like hunting lion, even with hounds, the odds are against you. What would it drop to if you removed the dogs from that equation? Like pure random luck?
Yeah. So I've hunted in Oregon every year. Obviously, it's where I've lived my whole life. They banned lion hunting or dogs for lions in 94. I've never killed one. I'm out all the time. I always have a lion tag because they make it where it's really cheap. It's like 11 or 15 bucks because they want people to buy these lion tags and hopefully just happen to see them and kill them, because you really have not a snowball's chance in hell of killing one. But maybe with the numbers of everybody having one and all the rifle hunters out there, maybe they'll get a few killed. But still, the lion numbers are exploding since then. Deer numbers are down. And that's just how it works. But yeah, you pretty much have no chance other than just shithouse luck without dogs, to answer your question.
That's what I suspected. All right, talk to me about the lift, run, shoot, something that seems to be relatively important in your life. Where does that come from? Where did you get that mantra? Where did it start? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, that's just been my routine. I just like for years. It's just that's all what I do. You know, I had a full time job up until not too long ago, and so I would just think that I can't be in the woods every day. I can't be out scouting. I can't be hunting every day. So what can I do to move the needle in the right direction on self improvement? And that would be like lift weights. I run the mountain here, or I run, every miles every day, and then I shoot my bow every day. So this lift, run, shoot approach, this lifestyle, that's what every day I feel like if I can do this, I'm getting a little bit better. So now that's kind of, now people have kind of known about it. And when I first started, it was just me. And, you always got supporters, but a lot of hunters were like, not a lot of them, but plenty of them would talk shit about, training to hunt. What do you think? You're some professional athlete. This is bow hunting, blah, blah, blah. So it'd just be a good way just to, judge and talk shit. Now it's been, now there's some brands that are designed around training to hunt. So now it's a little more accepted, but what I do now is on the show here on my podcast, I'll bring people in, like Mike Glover, you mentioned, he came in, he did what I do, lift, run, shoot. And, so I just share my routine with people. That's kind of what it is.
Ever since I've known you, actually the first time I met you was in Vegas with Joe. You were eating a waffle. You are already running, but I feel like you were already doing that. When did that come into the routine though? Cause I suspect that always hasn't been the case. Like when you were deep into bow hunting and working your normal job, how did that running portion integrate into who you are?
I always kind of ran a little bit, like 10Ks and things like that, just to get ready for football. Me and I lived on the same road as the quarterback. So we would like get together and, all summer and just play catch basically. But we also would run this race here in town called the Butte to Butte. And it's in Eugene. It's just a 10K on July 4th. That was pretty much, and I still do it. So that's pretty much my running. But then once I started hunting the wilderness and hunting on my own, especially in the wilderness, I was like, I think a big part of it is, being alone in the mountains, you have to be confident. And I wasn't that confident. And I felt like the harder I trained, the more I gained confidence to survive, and not even like, oh, I'm going to survive, but just confidence in being capable of overcoming challenge. So the more I trained, the more confident I felt about overcoming challenge. And in the mountains and the wilderness by yourself, there's a lot of challenge. So I just started like, well, man, the harder I train, the better I feel. The better I feel, the more effective hunter I am. Because if you go out, lions or they don't lack confidence. They know they're going to kill every time. So it's just like that confidence is such a key part to just being effective in the mounds. And so I was like, man, I can get better. I can get tougher. And so that's where it just kind of, what's the limit here? And I'm still trying to find the limit.
I'm going to start my own club. It's going to be called Lift, Fight, Shoot.
Okay.
And then we'll have...
I know you've been training a lot.
We'll have two guys...
I know your wife is a beast.
Oh, God damn. She's fucking three-stripe black belt. She's like a world champion at jiu-jitsu. It's a very difficult dynamic to navigate.
can she choke you out?
I mean, I'm not going to say it hasn't happened, Cam, but I'm not going to say it has.
I know.
Here's the thing.
I know. I follow along, and it's, yes, I know she's a beast. I know that's a whole different, I've never done that, the rolling, but so a lot of respect, and I know she's a badass, so that's pretty cool.
Well, for me, the best thing about getting shot is that I don't have to run anymore, because I hate it. My gait is off. Like I still have some nerve issues in my left ankle, and I just like on a treadmill, I would be okay, but I have to be so careful with like rocks or angles. Like for me, it's just, I've rolled my ankle so many times. So it's, I probably would do that if I was still capable, but I'm literally at a place where I'm not. And that's when I found jiu-jitsu, I'm like, oh, why run when you can just stay, fuck people up.
Yeah, I know. You know, my sons have done a little bit, and just it sounds miserable. I mean, you got some big, hot, sweaty guy laying on top of you, and you can't breathe, and you can't move, and you want to get out, and you can't do shit.
It sounds like date night. What are you talking about? That's awesome.
Yeah, I know that. You know, there's no harder workout than a fight. So I can imagine that definitely gets your, you know, whatever you need out of. Exercise, I'm sure you get through that.
Well, it's that, and for me, honestly, it's a lot of problem solving. You know, you are, it's not, I view it, I actually don't really look at it as fighting. I mean, you're in a gym on mats with people that you know inside of a rule set wearing a goofy uniform. I mean, sure, some of that stuff can apply outside of that, but what I really like is that it's a mental exercise or puzzle that you have to solve physically, because for every move you take, they'll take another one. And maybe it's the right one, maybe it's the wrong one. And maybe you were expecting them to do the right thing, but then they did the wrong thing. And it's this real time. And I like it, and it helps with problem solving. And for me, I've always had a very direct tie between physical health and emotional health. It's actually one of the toughest things of the surgery I could barely walk for the first few days. And then I stood up the first day with like the fresh staples and I coughed. I was like, that's it. This is my life's over. Like nobody gets better from this. Like I will never heal from this. I'm just like, oh my God, it all just came out. And now a month later, I'm doing a lot better. But yeah, it's, I need you to talk your sons out of participating in jiu-jitsu, because they're both brick shit houses and they're way younger. Yeah. So I don't think they need it in their life. They should focus on running.
I don't think they liked it anyway. So I think you're good to go. I said, it's like, yeah, it's, well, you would know better than me, but those first, just getting going probably feels helpless,
rough.
I'm sure. I mean,
it's rough. Yeah, and that's why a lot of people will describe it as like an ego destroying activity, because you just, you don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not magic. It's weight and it's leverage and it's angles. But if you encounter somebody who can use all of those things way better than you can, you're proper fucked.
Yeah.
And you're not getting out.
Yeah.
And there is a dude sweating on top of you. And, you know, some people are into that. Some people are not. I'm not here to judge. So it's not fair.
I know. So I don't think you have to worry about them. They are tough. But, I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, I think you got to, once you start, you got to stick it out to where you get a little more, as with anything, a little more confidence, a little more ability. Yeah. And
it gets better over time. It gets better over time. And then eventually you can be the sweaty dude on top of somebody, you know, dripping sweat into their eyes. Like, you're welcome.
That's best case scenario. Yeah.
Tell me about your podcast. Where'd the idea, I mean, we have a shared friend who has a relatively successful podcast. I mean, I hope it continues to grow for him. But tell me about your own.
He's got to stick with it.
I know. If he could just put more time and effort into it, he probably would get to that next level.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll get up to where we're at eventually. So, Joe, if you're listening, just, you know, keep your head down.
Yeah, man.
Don't give up yet.
Don't keep score. Just keep working. Follow your passion.
Yeah. It's a no, the podcast. So I hate talking. So I hate talking myself, but I like listening to interesting people. Like if I'm going to talk to you, I'm good to go. That's great. Because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck I have to offer. But anyway, this has been a good excuse to get some cool people in and to train with badass people that hopefully can make me better. So yeah, that's been the premise of it. It's I use the lift, run, shoot as an excuse to do what I like to do. And then the podcast is just kind of like, oh, by the way, do you want to sit down and BS after this? And whatever, it's been fine. I mean,
if you enjoy it,
I like being around badass people. I don't like being, it's hard. Fuck, dude. For me, like if I'm just talking, it's fine. But then I remember that I'm talking to somebody, and so I have to listen to what they say and think about what I'm going to ask that after they get done saying. So I'm trying to listen and also think, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm not great at it. I'm not great. I'm like, I just want to listen. And like when you talk to somebody normally in a conversation, you can just be like, yeah, fuck, that's crazy. And then you're like,
daydreaming.
Yeah. So anyway, but on a podcast, I mean, you got to keep that shit going. I don't know.
Well, then you run into a guy like Huberman, who I'm not even fucking smart enough to understand what's coming out of his mouth. So I could try as hard as I could to listen to what he's saying.
Yeah.
And I'd still be there like the MacBook firing up with the scroll wheel of death. Like, can you talk to me like a golden retriever?
No, you're smart as hell. So I know what you're saying, but you're saying it to me and I get it. So it's with like Chris Williamson, I had a doctor, Ron Patrick on Huberman. I'm just like, oh my God, I can talk to hunters. I can talk to athletes, whatever. These intellectual,
fuck, it's tough.
I'm just like, I don't even know. The only thing I offer is like when Huberman was here, it was like, well, I know you never talked to somebody as dumb as me, so maybe this will be new material for you. So and maybe it worked. I don't know.
That son of a bitch advocates against everything that I enjoy doing. Like, maybe I don't want to go and like eat properly or sleep well or stare at the sun in the morning. Like, stop telling me that the shit I like to do is bad. Stop it.
Or get in the ice bath. Who the fuck wants to do that?
Nobody wants to, but I can't argue the benefit of that. What do you want to leave people with?
All I want to do, like with my books or with what I've written, I want people, or where I'm at in life, for whatever reason, just been lucky, but just for them to realize that, yeah, there can be a lot of shit that's like you have to overcome or doesn't feel like going your way. Cause I was that person. And God, if you just consistent effort over time, you also, mentioned instant gratification. So if you can get past that part of it and maybe set, smaller goals, so there's littler wins more often than these big wins. Like, people say, oh, I want to, whatever, buy a Lamborghini or whatever. It's like, let's have a little like more achievable goal. But if you can set these small goals to give yourself confidence along the way, over time, man, you can accomplish almost anything. And it's easy for me to say now, but at the, back when I was in, just making poor decisions and everything else, I don't know, just sticking with it is the only reason why I've had any success. And it never happened overnight, and it never happened because I had money or new people or anything like that. But if you just don't fucking quit, man, you can accomplish a lot over time. So I would just say, I don't know, have a little heart, work hard, believe in yourself, and treat people with respect. You can get a long way.
I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. I hope it got you thinking about where we as a species, what our role is in the world, in the ecosystems that we navigate through every single day, and what your individual role may be. Hopefully it got you thinking about choices that you could make if you want to, actions that you could take if you should choose, and places that you could have an impact. and also potentially avenues for you to educate yourself more so you can make more educated decisions. If you enjoyed the episode with Cam and you want to learn more about him, go to CameronHames.com. And you can learn more about the campaign to educate the public about hunting as a means of wildlife population balance at SaveTheHuntColorado.com. Thanks for listening to Change Agents, an Ironclad original presented by Montana Knife Company. We are going to be back next week with an all-new guest, and I'll see you then.